This talk is offered by Ordinary Mind Zendo. Ordinary Mind was founded by Barry Magid, Dharma heir of Charlotte Joko Beck, and is dedicated to her vision of a psychologically minded Zen practice adapted to the needs of American students practicing in the context of their everyday lives. Our public programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
The Blue Cliff Record, Case 35, Questions and Answers. Introduction. In determining dragons and snakes, differentiating gems and stones, distinguishing black and white, and settling uncertainty, without an eye on your forehead and a talisman at your side, time and again, you'll mistake what you're dealing with. Right now, seeing and hearing are not obscured. Sound and form are unadulterated reality. But tell me, is it black or is it white? Is it crooked or is it straight? When you get there, how will you distinguish? In the case, Manjushri asks Mujaku, "Where have you just come from?" Mujaku said, "The south." Manjushri asked, "How is Buddhism being maintained in the south?" Mujaku said, "Few mendicants observe the precepts in this age of deterioration." Manjushri asked, "How many are in the congregations?" Mujaku said, "Some 300, some 500. And then Mujaku asked Manjushri, "How is it being maintained here?" Manjushri said, "The ordinary and the holy live together. Snakes and dragons mix." Mujaku said, "How many are in the congregation?" Manjushri said, 3 by 3 in front, 3 by 3 in back." In the verse, "The twists and turns of the thousand peaks are blue as indigo." Who says Manjushri was engaged in conversation? Laughable how many the people on the clear, cool mountain. 3 by 3 in front and 3 by 3 in back. Now this case is about discernment, seeing how things are. And the opening introductory remarks talk about distinguishing dragons and snakes, telling gems from ordinary stones, telling black from white. And the implication is that if you're going to be a teacher, you better be able to tell one student from another, what this one needs from what that one needs. They're not all the same. And yet, the case, the main case, this dialogue between Manjushri and Mujaku, says that not all kinds of discernment have to do with telling differences, seeing the differences between things. This morning, in my opening remarks, I contrasted the saying in the New Testament that Christ will return to separate the sheep from the goats from the saying, in another case here, the Blue Cliff Record, where Joshu likens himself to a bridge that lets horses cross and lets asses cross. The bridge does not make any discernment at all. And here, the setup of the story is supposedly that Mujaku is a monk on pilgrimage. And after wandering for a long time, he comes upon a temple in the middle of the mountains. And the head of that temple is actually the Bodhisattva Manjushri, Bodhisattva of discerning wisdom. He's depicted downstairs riding a lion. Mujaku doesn't recognize Manjushri, and they have this dialogue. And Manjushri asks where he's come from and how things are, where he's from. And Mujaku is like most of us in that when he starts describing things, he immediately starts evaluating and judging. He says, well, down where I come from, there may be a lot of people in the congregations, but none of them are practiced very strictly. You know, the mendicants down there don't keep the precepts. And this is, we should see our own, this represents our own notion of discernment. We are all preoccupied with the how am I doing question. Am I there yet question. How do I compare to the teacher or the other people around me? And this is a, you know, this is a certain kind of ordinary notion of discernment that wants to give everything a score, have everything have a rank, put everything in some kind of hierarchy. But Manjushri represents a very different kind of discernment. He says, well, in this place, the ordinary and holy live together. Snakes and dragons mix. That from my vantage point, all beings, just as they are, manifest Buddha nature. See, that's Shakyamuni's original enlightenment experience. All things, just as they are manifesting this perfection. It's not a question of, I've got it, you don't. It's, can you see how everyone has already got it? And Mujaku asked Manjushri, how many are in the congregation here? And when he describes the situation down south, he says, you know, it's pretty big temples, you know, 300, 500. Manjushri says, three in the front, three in the back. Not a very big number. And says it's also sort of 3x3 in the front, 3x3 in the back. If you sort of says, well, you know, sort of six of one, half dozen of the other, you know, it's you can't compare the ones who have it and the ones who don't. It's just they're all indistinguishable. not countable. I think that it's this kind of discernment, of the discernment of sameness, that's in fact often much harder to come by than discernment of difference. The psychoanalyst Harry Stack Sullivan was famous for saying, you know, in the end, people are all more human than otherwise. So what they all have in common is more important than all their differences and all their different diagnoses. But people come to practice usually because they feel different in a negative kind of way. They don't feel like everybody else. They feel more troubled, more confused, more ashamed. And that practice, you know, is undertaken with the hope to eliminate that parts of themselves that make them different, that make them feel judged or ashamed. But it's very rare that we see the solution to that is that, well, if I practice, maybe after a long time, I'll get to be just like everybody else, right? Rarely hear that. If I practice for a long time, I'll get to be somebody special. That we're not going to eliminate difference, but we're just going to change the valence from a negative sign to a positive sign. Right? We're going to hold on to that notion of difference, but we're, instead of being specially bad, we're going to be specially wonderful or enlightened. Right? So Manjushri is here saying that the essence of wisdom might be allowing yourself to recover a sense of being ordinary rather than being special. And I think that we can just watch how it plays out among ourselves all the time, right? How do we see ourselves in relation to one another, right? Do we fit in to the Sangha? Do we see the people in the room as people just like me? Right? Or are they, you know, people I want to stand out from rather than blend in with, right? How can I look different so the teacher will notice me instead of all of them, right? I mean, that's the sort of thing that always happens in any kind of group. You know, one of the things I always used to joke about was people sit and do koan study for many years and finally somebody might have a big kensho and have an experience of oneness. And what happens? They say, oh, now I'm different from everybody else. Right? I've had a special experience of just happens to be of oneness, but it's made me really special and different, right? It's this built-in paradox of what we think is going to distinguish us, what the outcome of all this practice is supposed to be. Joko said the outcome of practice is nothing special. Everybody hated it. But I think one way or another we are all more ordinary than we like to admit. And that's not a bad thing.